We should finish up this Old Testament survey this evening. We started toward the end of last year, the last Sunday night of the month, looking at the Old Testament and a quick survey of the things that are contained therein. And when we started, we began with the time frame of Adam and Eve, certainly with the beginning in the book of Genesis. We made mention regarding the book of Job during the time of the fathers of Israel or the flood period. There's some question exactly when that took place, when it happened. But it was certainly early in the history of the world from what we understand. We talked about how after the flood, the story began to turn toward Abraham and toward the fathers of Israel and the Egyptian bondage and the famines and the Exodus and all of those sort of things. And we continued looking at the things of the nation of Israel and how they wandered in the wilderness after having been freed from the nation of Egypt because of their wickedness. And it was some 40 years after their release before they were able to enter into the land of Canaan, the land of Canaan that had been promised to them. And last time we looked at that promised nation, but the time just before that, we talked about the conquest of Canaan and the period of judges and the time frames. And as I've made mention several times, don't give a whole lot of credence to those numbers up there on this timeline. Every time I go researching somewhere about what happened when, I come up with a new time frame or a new time date that this has happened and that has happened. So anytime you go researching those things, it depends on how many people you research as to what dates you're going to get. Some of those things, there are some definite ideas regarding, and one of those we'll take note of this evening, and that is the time frame of the silence of the Scriptures. Somewhere around 400 B.C., the Israelites stopped hearing from God. It was a time of silence. We'll make mention of that later. But during the time frame of the Judges, these particular books and parts of books took place. We talked about Samuel, and then we talked about the United Kingdom last month, and we talked about the three kings of that kingdom, Saul, David, and Solomon. Made mention of the books that record the time frame of that kingdom. And if you remember, we made mention that the book of Chronicles, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, records the history of Judah's kings, not Israel's. 1st and 2nd Kings include the account of Israel's kings during the time of the divided kingdom. Notice the other books that are there, many of those that we look at as prophets, Obadiah, Joel, Jonah, Amos, Hosea, Micah, Isaiah. Some of these sent to Israel, some sent to Jerusalem and Judah, and others sent to other nations. And I was noticing in some of my stuff I was looking at this afternoon and refreshing my mind on some of these things. Actually, Obadiah and Joel, there are some that say they took place even after the time of the divided kingdom. So there's even some discussion regarding that. As we were finishing up last week, we talked about Judah standing alone as a nation by itself. There was some 100 to 150 years that they were there as a nation of the Lord's people without the nation of Israel. It was during the days of Hezekiah, king of Judah, that we read of the fact that the Israelites of the northern kingdom were scattered abroad throughout the world by the Assyrians. There were foreigners brought into that part of the country, and as we've made mention before in studying the New Testament and making mention of the Samaritans, that's the result. The Samaritans, a mixed race of Jews and those that were brought in. And certainly there are things that we can learn from that. We talked about some of these kings, but what we want to make note of is every single one of the kings of the Israel section were evil, with almost no exception. They were bad, evil, some worse than others. And if you paid attention last week and last month and can remember that far back, all of these names were white last time. And I went through, as we were introing into what we want to talk about this evening, I wanted to make note, these red names were bad kings. You know, during this time frame, there are several who were bad kings, but during this time frame of Judah and Israel, the divided kingdom, there was some 200 and something years out of the 250 or so years of the divided kingdom that Israel had, or Judah had, good kings. And that's why they were spared. It was during this time that we read the prophecies that were given by Isaiah, where Isaiah urged the people of Judah and Jerusalem to turn back to God. And through the prophecies of Isaiah and his work and others, the men and women of Judah were spared from the Assyrian captivity. This is also the time frame when Elijah and Elisha were prophesying and teaching, along with several other of the prophets. And then we have the time frame of Judah alone, some 130 to 150 years, depending on exactly who you're talking to. And I want you to take note there. Two good kings. Two good kings. There were 61 good years approximately. And remember, part of the time frame of Hezekiah, they were still in the divided kingdom. They had one good king during the time that they stood alone after the days of Hezekiah, and that was Josiah. 32 years they served the Lord. And very shortly after, they were taken into captivity as well. In the days of Jehoiachin, in order to make a distinction there, those two names are really a whole lot alike. In 2 Kings chapter 25, some in chapter 24 as well, we read about this. Nebuchadnezzar came and took captives of the men and women of Judah in Jerusalem and carried them back to Babylon. He took the king, Jehoiachin, and he set Mattaniah, whom he renamed Zedekiah, up as king over the nation of Israel, of Judah. And that 11 years that Zedekiah reigned, Judah was actually under the rule of Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. That brings us to the time of the Babylonian captivity. And when you want to read about the Babylonian captivity, there's one place you can go. The book of Daniel. Now, you'll note there's some other books mentioned here. Nahum and Zephaniah and such talk about Judah alone. But we have Daniel and Ezekiel and Lamentations that talk to us about the time frame of the Babylonian captivity. And to learn some about what was going on at that time, we look to the book of Daniel, and certainly there are stories in the book of Daniel that many of us have heard from our youth. The story of how Daniel decided he wouldn't be defiled by the king's meats, and so he stood up and said, I won't eat those things. Even though he was away from his family, he was in a foreign nation, he was under another king's rule, he stood firm for God. He was blessed as a result. The story sounds, at least in some ways, very similar to the story of Joseph when he was sold into slavery in Egypt. We know the story of how Daniel rose in the ranks and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because I cannot remember their Hebrew names. These men stood firm for God and they rose up through the ranks and they were rulers in the land. They were over various areas. They were important men to the king. They interpreted dreams, Daniel in particular. And we have the record of those dreams and the things that were given. It was during this time that Nebuchadnezzar had the dream about the image that would tell about the nations that would come. The Babylonian kingdom, the kingdom of the Medes and Persians, the Greek kingdom, and then the Roman kingdom, and the image of the man with the various kinds of body parts. And Daniel talked to the king about how this was what was going to take place. And during this time, it seemed that King Nebuchadnezzar, while he was not an Israelite, gave attention to the God of Daniel. There are some instances where he did not, certainly where some of Daniel's contemporaries were trying to get back at him and cause him some problems, and they made some changes with the king, various kings and such, to cause problems. But it seems that at least a couple of the kings that Daniel served under were at least considerate of their worship and service to God. Nebuchadnezzar was reprimanded by God. In fact, one of the chapters of the book of Daniel is the words of Nebuchadnezzar, where he learned from God. The message that he learned from God is that God rules in the kingdoms of men. Nebuchadnezzar, he's the one that spent the time out in the wild as an animal to be reminded that he didn't do it by himself. It was the power of God. Daniel tells us a great deal about the time frame of the Babylonian kingdom. But I want us to understand that there are some connections maybe that we need to make that we may not be making in regards to the time frames involved here. Oftentimes we talk about the Babylonian captivity and we think of it as being a certain period of time, and certainly it was. It was about 70 years that they were in captivity in Babylon. There was no one in Jerusalem serving God as they ought to be. But some of the stories that we read may be separated because they're located in different places in our Old Testament scriptures. And we need to maybe keep in mind some connections that we have in regards to these things. Especially when we look at the book of Daniel, there are a couple of kings that are mentioned. Actually, three, I guess, in particular. Or four, we've got Nebuchadnezzar, we've got Belshazzar, but we've also got Darius and Cyrus the Persian. And Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar were Babylonians. Darius and Cyrus were of the Medes and Persian Empire that took over the Babylonian Empire. And I want you to keep those names in mind because those are some names that pop up in some of the other books as we continue to consider the events of this time period. And while oftentimes we will look, as we've got marked here, Daniel chapter 1 through 5 talks about the time of the Babylonian captivity, and Daniel chapter 6 through 12 talks about the time of the restoration. And while in a general sense that is true, we need to understand that some of the things that are found, like in Daniel chapter 7 and chapter 8, actually took place during the time of the Babylonian kingdom. If you look at the beginning of chapter 7 and chapter 8, when Daniel talks about the visions and the time that he saw them, it was during the days of Belshazzar. So it's hard to make a definite line that here up to here in Daniel is the captivity and then from here forward is somewhere else. But those visions were talking about the restoration, and I think that's one of the reasons we will often find them making reference to those chapters in regard to the restoration. Certainly, there's not a lot of information. We could go and scatter ourselves through the book of Ezekiel and look at all the things he has there. There's some really wild visions in Ezekiel and some of these other places as well. But we're looking at a survey of these things, and this brings us to the Jewish restoration. And once again, I back and forth as to exactly what books should be included in the restoration and what books should be included in the captivity. When we read in the book of Esther, it sounds like the things are taking place during the time of the captivity because they are in captivity. And if you read in the book of Esther, you'll find the king there, King Ahasuerus. And you'll find a connection between King Ahasuerus and the book of Daniel, because Darius was the son of Ahasuerus. But I'll tell you a little secret. I can't guarantee you that it's the same Ahasuerus, and I don't think anybody else can either. It's possible. But trying to use that specifically to put a date on Esther might be a difficult thing to do, because Ahasuerus was king in Susa, Darius was king in Babylon. He took over the kingdom of Babylon. Daniel was in the regions of Babylonia and Babylon during the time of the writing of his book. But as we consider the restoration, one of the places we turn to begin with is in the book of Ezra. And in the book of Ezra, we find several time frames being made mention of. In particular, in Ezra chapter 1 and verse 1, we find that the Lord, through Jeremiah, had spoken a prophecy and it was about to be fulfilled. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus during the first year of his reign. And that's the reason we wanted to make note of the fact that Daniel was profitable and did well during the reigns of Darius and Cyrus, because it was during the third year of Cyrus that Daniel had his vision in chapter 10 of the book of Daniel. So you see why there might be some question as to putting all of Daniel in one place or all of Daniel in another place. the vision that Daniel had in Daniel chapter 10 actually took place 2 years after King Cyrus began to send people back to Jerusalem. And certainly that is what this vision and what this time frame is talking about. So we continue to look through and consider the things that are spoken of and considered there. There were certainly a number of kings that were involved in the rebuilding of the city of Jerusalem. As the Israelites were sent back following the 70 weeks, and we won't spend a lot of time talking about that because there's a lot involved in that. But as they went back to rebuild the temple and the tabernacle, the temple and the walls and such of Jerusalem, there were several kings involved. You will recognize the name Artaxerxes as well as the name Cyrus. Others that might be involved also. And so we recognize this was a process of time. It wasn't a, we went there and it's all over and done with, but it's a process of time. The first siege against Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, some say was about 606 B.C. And the return of Zerubbabel that we're talking about here at the first part of the book of Ezra was in about 536 B.C. Now, once again, if you go and read from somebody else who's researched, you're going to find different numbers in those dates. But the thing to note is it was a time frame of about 70 years, which is exactly what Jeremiah and Daniel had been told by God would be the time frame between the siege and the return. The book of Haggai, chapter 1 and 2, also gives us some insight into the things going on in the time of the restoration in the second year of King Darius. Once again, one of those names that we heard in the book of Daniel. The word of the Lord came to Haggai, or by Haggai, to Zerubbabel, and they were in Judah at that time. Chapter 2 of the book of Haggai in verse 1 tells us that it was later on in the second year of Darius that they heard the word of the Lord through Haggai once again. Later on in the ninth month of that second year, the word of the Lord came to Haggai, giving us a time frame involved. The second year of King Darius is mentioned again in verse 20. Zerubbabel was one of those that was sent back to help rebuild the city of Jerusalem, to settle things back as they ought to be. Certainly these messages from God through Haggai and other prophets that may have spoken were of an encouragement to the Israelites that had come back to that area. When we continue to consider the things that are taking place, certainly we want to consider the deeds and things that are recorded in the book of Esther. Esther is generally placed in the time frame of the restoration, even though it's talking about them being in captivity. But it was during this time that an important event that's made still being celebrated by Jews even today, but was celebrated in the days of Christ, the Feast of Purim was established. That's the feast that was established by Esther and her uncle because of the deliverance that they received from those who would try to destroy them. Certainly we know the story of Haman and the story of Queen Vashti and how Esther became queen as well during that time frame. It states in there in the beginning of the book of Esther that Ahasuerus, who was reigning there in Susa, was reigning from the area of India to Ethiopia. Now, India is way over to the east. Ethiopia is over in Africa. So he was reigning over a great portion of the world. He was one of those, a part of one of those kingdoms that were talked about in the days of Daniel even. And the story of Esther certainly is a story of deliverance, a story of trust and hope and depending upon God. And it's a good place to go to learn those things. But let's remember, it also tells us a little bit about the restoration of the Jewish people, of them coming back into the right relationship with God. Because their dependence upon God in delivering them from Haman and his evil schemes was a part of what allowed the Israelites to come back into the good graces of God. Understanding that I have found in some research somewhere around 483 B.C., is the time frame of Ahasuerus's third year. Once again, it's going to depend on where you look that up as to exactly what year that's going to be. But it is definitely in the time frame that's most often looked at as the time frame of the Jewish restoration. So during the time that Esther's events are taking place, and she's saving the Jews in Susa and throughout the kingdom of Ahasuerus, there are Jews in the city of Jerusalem that are rebuilding the temple, and maybe even rebuilding the walls at that time. Make some connections with the time frames. Sometimes we lose those because we've gotten so used to reading from our Old Testament scriptures in the order that they're presented in the Bibles that we have. But we need to understand that's not necessarily the order that these things took place. Back in the book of Ezra, in chapter 7 through 10, we look again at some things regarding the restoration, or we read about Artaxerxes. We read about Ezra, and certainly the things that we read about Ezra, we've looked at him as a person that we can look to give us an understanding of the kind of attitude that we ought to have. Remember, he's the one that set his heart to know the Word of God and to teach it to the people of Israel. He went from Babylon to Jerusalem, and he gave himself wholly over to the study and application of the Word of God and teaching it to his brethren. While he was there in Jerusalem was one of the time frames where we find that the Israelites were rebuked because they had mixed themselves with the peoples of the nations round about them. It is in these chapters that they are told, Ezra is told, that the Levites had married women from the nations around about them, thus adulterating themselves with the wicked people of the strange nations, and they were told that they needed to turn loose of those wives. This is one of the places that we turn to get an understanding of God's attitude toward joining ourselves with wickedness. Certainly, it tells us a little bit about the need for restoration among the people of Israel. Here God was bringing the people back into the nation of Canaan once again, giving them Jerusalem and Judah once again, yet they were mixing themselves with the peoples of the world. And as such, they were turning against God once again. Approximate date for Ezra's return from exile, depending on exactly where you look, somewhere around 450 or so B.C. Very close to the end of the time frame we have recorded teachings from God given to the nation of Israel for a long, long period of time. But understand that what these priests and others who had taken foreign women were told to do is separate yourself from them. You've got to come out from among those things. This is some of the examples that I'm confident the Apostle Paul and others referred back to when he reminded the Jews and the Gentiles of the day that they needed to separate themselves from the world. In order to remain pleasing to God, we've got to put away, cause to leave, the things of this world. Also, we need to consider the book of Nehemiah. And certainly, we're not giving any long time frame to devotion of study of any of these as we look at this quick survey, but the book of Nehemiah also reminds us of the things that were taking place in regards to the restoration. Sometime after all of these things had taken place, there still weren't walls around the city of Jerusalem. Nehemiah, who was not in Jerusalem at that time, but recognized the need and made it a desire to go, and his king sent him to go back to the city of Jerusalem because he saw his sadness in his heart, and sent him so that he could rebuild the walls. And certainly the book of Nehemiah talks about the difficulties and struggles that they had in rebuilding those walls. These events took place just a short while after Ezra had come to the city of Jerusalem. So we find that Ezra and Nehemiah were contemporaries. We find Esther was not far off from this time frame if we're looking at how these things associate together in time. One of the things we learned from the book of Nehemiah is that the people had lost their focus in working for God. If we were to spend a lot of time, we would find that in some of these where he's talking about the building of the temple, we might recall that they were warned because they had fixed their houses, but they hadn't built God's house yet. Here, there was still a lot of work to do to separate them from the nations round about them. There were still walls to build around Jerusalem. And there's some imagery there that maybe we can connect with and we can use today to remind us that we need to build a wall between ourselves and the world. We still have to live in the world, but we need to separate ourselves as much as we possibly can from the things of this world. Maybe sometimes we need to put up some barriers, and we need to be dedicated in keeping those barriers as they ought to be, so that we can keep ourselves separated from the things of this world. And certainly the lesson that we find from Nehemiah is a need to focus on the work of God. The work that God has given us to do, we need to be diligent in doing it. One more book that I want to consider. Talk just a little bit about the book of Malachi, the last book that we have in our scriptures, if I recall correctly. One of the final sets of teachings that the Israelites received. And the message there, in general, is you need to come back to God. It's interesting, at least to me it is, here this people that had once been this great nation in the days of David and Solomon, that had seen the blessings that God would pour out upon them when they devoted themselves to serving the Lord, and had experienced the devastation that would come upon them when they turned their backs on God. Even after the captivity they had been in because of their wickedness, and being brought back to that promised land, the reminder they had to have was still serve God, submit to Him. It's a reminder that that lesson is one that we need to constantly be giving to ourselves. We need to constantly be reminding ourselves that no matter what's going on in our life, if we want to receive eternity with God, we must devote ourselves wholly over to serving Him. Judah had turned their back upon God. They'd used his altars to sacrifice to false gods. They'd torn down his altars. They'd built new altars. Time and time throughout their history, the reason that there is no 10 tribes anymore is because they turned their back completely on God. The only reason there was still a remnant is because there were a few who remained faithful to the Lord. Just like those few who were taken into captivity, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the only ones mentioned there that would not defile themselves with the king's meat. They were blessed by God because they served Him, even though they were persecuted because of it. Or the story of Esther and Mordecai, the story of Nehemiah, the story of Ezra, and various other ones, Jeremiah and Isaiah, who despite persecution continued trying to call the Israelites back to God all through this time. And it's a lesson that we need even today. In Malachi chapter 3, particular verse 8 through 12, it talks about the people having robbed God, and it talks specifically of robbing in their tithes and in their offerings. But in a general sense, that is what Israel had been doing ever since He brought them out of the land of Egypt. God had fulfilled His promise, and Israel refused to stand up and fulfill theirs. The lesson of Christ and of John, the prophets of God, who were the first to be heard from God for about 400 years, was return to God. The message of Jeremiah and of Isaiah, the message of Ezra and of Ezekiel, the message of Daniel, of Esther and Mordecai, all of these other prophets was come back to God. there's anything that we can learn from a survey looking at the things that took place in the Old Testament, it is that man is very capable of doing whatever he wants. And he has a real hard time doing what he's told to do. It's a lesson that we need even today. A lesson of a need to come back to God. When I noticed the invitation song that Brother John chose for this evening, I'm resolved. I was reminded of the resolve of Ezra. He resolved in his heart to know the Word of God, to live the Word of God, and to teach the Word of God. Even the nation of people that continually turn themselves away from the Word of God. We need to have that same resolve today. Surveying the Old Testament, looking at all these things and making these connections may not be a direct connection to what it takes for us to be saved and right and wholesome inside of God, but it should at least be a reminder that the message of God has always been, submit to me, do my will, and you'll be blessed. And every single time men and women have followed that instruction, has turned out to be true. And every single time men and women have turned away from that instruction, it has brought destruction and horror to them and to their nation. The story of Israel is a story of failure leading up to great success. Or maybe the other way around, success in the midst of great failure, because it was through Israel that Christ came and brought us the means of being free from sin through the message, through His blood and sacrifice on the cross of Calvary. But is the story of Israel that they were failures in serving the God of heaven as a nation? Let us be diligent in keeping the will of the Lord. Let us take the resolve of Ezra to heart to do God's will. Let's take the resolve of Nehemiah to heart. Be diligent in doing the work that God has given us to do. Complete our jobs. Not just get partway done, but go all the way through. We look this evening, many of us find we are amiss in any of these things. We need to correct those things. We need to pray to God. We won't have to offer sacrifices on altars like the Israelites of old did. We do need to go to God in prayer and confess our wrongs. We need to turn from our wrongs. We need to ask Him to forgive us our wrongs. He's promised that He will. Wipe them away as if they've never been. God says, if there's something in your life that's amiss that needs to be corrected, and we can assist coming up your desire, we don't always stand and sing.